Hello, everybody. Sorry about that. I just got a tickle in my throat right when we went live. So I apologize for that. This is Hashtag No Limits, and I am your host, Shelley Kino. Hashtag No Limits is about people who society places limits upon, but who are busting through those limits. Ophelia says in Hamlet, we know who we are, but not who we will be. And I believe that to be 100% true, and that there is not a more beautiful or better example than the caterpillar turning into the butterfly. For those who don't know, the caterpillar literally dissolves into its cells, and then it reforms into the butterfly. That's not enough struggle, though. It still has to struggle to get out of the cocoon in order for its wings to be strong enough to fly. I can't imagine that any of that is easy, but definitely neither is busting through limits that society places upon people. And today I bring Peter to you, and he is going to share with you about some AI developments, some parts of his life that brought him to that, and just this wonderful creation that he and another couple of people have developed. And so I'm really excited to bring him to you and all that information. But first, I have to go through the fun businessy things that we always have to talk about. If you are watching live or in the replay, leave us a hashtag live or hashtag replay and where you're watching from. If at any point during the episode you have any questions or comments, please put them into the chat and I will be sure to put them up on the screen if it's live, or I will make sure that Peter sees them if it's a comment or a question directly for him if you watch this in the replay. And of course, make sure you like and subscribe to the channel so you don't ever miss an episode of Hashtag No Limits. Peter, welcome. Hello.
Hi, Shelley. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, I'm really excited. We had some hiccups getting to this point, and I'm so excited to be here with you today. And so go ahead and share, you know, your background. Like I mentioned, you're going to share some of that to lead us to what we're talking about today.
Yeah, so my name is Peter Fitzpatrick, and I'm one of the founders of a company called Fawn Friends. And we've created what we call a magical plushie, which is a companion that helps parents raise neurodivergent kids to be successful and content. The magical plushie is sort of this tall, about a foot tall. She moves her ears to show you how she's feeling. I think we can show a video in a second. And we've worked with experts to teach her to help children regulate their emotions, pursue goals, and develop secure relationships.
And I just before coming on today was reading a post from someone in it, and it was one of those fill in the sentences. And the beginning of the sentence was, what do kids need most right now? Mm-hmm. And I mean, I just looked at maybe 25, 30 of the answers. And I would say the overwhelming majority was that kids need to know how to self-regulate. Mm-hmm. So the fact that you have developed this, and her name is Willow, is that correct?
Well, Willow, she is a fawn. So there's like fawn, okay. You can think of it as like a breed of an animal, a breed of a dog. So fawn is mm-hmm. a breed of a magical creature. And Willow mm-hmm. is the very first fawn that came to Earth to help children okay. achieve their dreams.
Okay. And yeah, so the fact that you have designed this and developed it, have seen the need for it even before these kinds of questions have been out there for students, and the fact that that answer is such an overwhelming response. And it's not just in that thread that I've seen it. I've heard that from teachers. I've heard that from parents. So I'm really excited to share with my audience what you are doing, and for myself just to know about it, because I think it's such an amazing idea and concept, and coming to fruition is amazing. So sorry to interrupt you. Keep going.
No, that was great. And it's interesting you say that, because I would say in my own life, emotional regulation was the number one thing holding me back mm-hmm. in my 20s. Mm-hmm. I think growing up, for society and family and school and university all taught me that my intellect was what would create my future. Mm. And that I needed to get good grades, and I needed to think properly and learn structured thinking, and all that's really important. Mm-hmm. But there was very little, I'd almost argue no education on emotional regulation.
Yeah.
And the role models that we see for me as a man in popular culture were not regulated role models. Right. And I don't think my parents and that generation had any emotional regulation education either. And so I was completely unaware of it, but until I turned about 28, when all of a sudden I started to realize, oh, my emotions are the thing that's making, it's limiting me, preventing me from having a strong intimate relationship, preventing me at work, preventing my happiness. And so I think it makes sense that people are starting to recognize that that's the number one thing that children need help with. And I think it's probably exacerbated by like the amount of time we spend scrolling.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. And I follow several behavioral specialists. That's an area that I just am fascinated by. And so many of them talk about that. Like that is definitely one big key is letting children, we need to teach them to be resilient. And we're not doing a good job of that anymore. And I so agree with what you were saying regarding our parents and our own generation that we weren't taught how to self-regulate or that it was even necessary. It was just let it go or just push it down. I didn't even know it was a thing.
I still remember the day when I was with a therapist and he was like, yeah, you know, when your stomach hurts, that's because you're like violating one of your values. And you know, it doesn't have to hurt. It's a signal, but it you don't have to feel that way. And I was like, wait, what? Like these swings I experienced, I don't have to. I just didn't understand that was even possible.
Right.
But it's amazing how much peace I feel now. I of course still experience emotional variability, but yeah, at least for me growing up, it like was, I didn't even know it was possible to experience life differently. And how much better.
Yes. And I think you're quite a bit younger than I am. And when I was growing up, I had anxiety, but nobody knew that's the name to give it. And exactly what you just said, I had stomach aches all the time. And they would do tests and all these medical tests. And they would put me through this battery of tests once or twice or three times a year because I kept having these stomach aches and they could never figure out what was causing the stomach. There was no physical reason for the stomach ache. But back then it wasn't thought to think, I mean, the comments that the doctors would say to my mom over and over again was it's all in her head. Well, they didn't realize how right they were.
I was about to say, yeah,
but not in the way that they meant it.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. So I'm very much, you know, a person who has gone through this myself. And thankfully, early in my 20s, I realized that I needed somebody to help me. And so I sought counseling. And, you know, like you, just so much irrational thinking on my part because nobody taught me any differently until a counselor. Mm-hmm. So I'm forever grateful to my counselors. And I still have a counselor. She's been my counselor for 20 years off and on. And I still, you know, several times a year go to see her. And it's just kind of like, it's my, you know, you go see your primary care physician once a year. And so for me with my counselor, that's the same checkup kind of thing. Yeah. And yeah, I still have the, you know, the ups and downs of my emotions, but yes, I'm so much more peaceful and at peace, even in stressful situations.
Yeah. So to like circle that all back, emotional regulation is just such an important skill to teach children. And it's kind of hard because parents, if they didn't learn how to emotionally regulate, I had another therapist actually explain to me, like they're like having kids is like being in the Super Bowl of emotional regulation. It's like very, very difficult because kids are extremely triggering. And so it's an important thing, but it's quite difficult. It requires a lot of attention to do well.
Yeah.
A lot of intentional and a lot of failure, which is hard.
Yes. And intentional attention. I think that's a key that is often missed is we think, oh, kids are crying out for attention. Well, yes, they are, but they don't necessarily realize that's what they're doing. But we need to be intentional at giving them attention when they're not crying out for it with behaviors so that they get that bucket full so they don't have to act out to get that attention. So in the bio that I put out for today's episode, it talked about your childhood a little bit. Mm-hmm. Do you mind going back and sharing some of that information?
Yeah. Yeah. Every time I tell a story, I'm a little bit like, well, anyway. So when I was 7, my parents divorced, and it was a really challenging event for our family. I was the oldest of three, and I was in the middle of two people that had trouble being in the same room until basically I left for university. And so through that experience, it's interesting. They were both doing their absolute best, and they were overloaded and didn't have the like support they needed or the education on stuff like emotional regulation. And I was in a big house in a great zip code with aunts and uncles over all the time and more than enough hockey practice. Like, I was Canadian, so I was playing ice hockey all the time and friends okay. over all the time. And they gave us everything that they knew how to give to grow up and be right. happy and successful. But the whole emotional piece of it was missing. And so there wasn't really space for my feelings because there were so many feelings flying around. And there wasn't right. anyone to talk to about what was going on for me through that period.
Yeah.
And that ended up, I developed a bunch of wounds and patterns and emotional swings that I sort of wasn't aware of, didn't even know were there until I was 28 when I started to become aware of it. Because someone entered my life that I cared enough about to change for and who actually could see this stuff and tell me like, this is wrong. And so through all that, I like learned how important it is or how valuable it would have been for me to have someone to talk to about what was going on when I was that age. I also had ADHD, which wasn't diagnosed until I was in university. And wow. so, and one of the hallmark less talked about symptoms of ADHD is like emotional swings mm-hmm. or less emotional regulation. And so the combination of that sort of helped me understand how valuable something like any being could be, a human or non-human being that could help a child feel seen, talk about what's going on in their life, and also develop those three things I talked about, emotional regulation, or maybe I haven't said it yet, emotional regulation, building secure relationships, and then setting and pursuing goals.
Yeah. And so how do you go about doing that? And first of all, I'm sorry for that rough childhood. It always hurts my heart when I hear that children have gone through stuff like that. And it's not anything that, I had somebody say, well, you don't know me. You don't need to, you can't feel sorry for me, or you can't, you know, you can't be sorry about what I've gone through. And I said, I can, I don't have to know you to have empathy that your life was rougher than mine or different than mine in a rough way.
Yeah. Different.
Yeah.
There's this, I keep thinking about this wonderful Jordan Peterson quote. It's like an old interview of his with Joe Rogan. I should have brought it to share. I've been listening to it on repeat. Like, I've probably listened to it 150 times now, but it's like 30 seconds. But in it, he starts with like, life is tragic and painful for everyone. So I really do think that we all go through our own version of these things. I don't know how to measure which one's worse or not, but I do think that. So thank you for your empathy. And I have a sense that most of us go through things that are pretty challenging.
Yeah. And I think things affect each of us differently. So you and I could have gone through similar situations, but you and I would have reacted to it differently and mm-hmm. had different outcomes because we're different people. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think that's a good point. And Jordan Peterson is someone that I am familiar with and appreciate a lot of his lessons and how he sees life. So thanks for bringing him up as well. So you said at 28, you met somebody that you wanted to be different for. And so you started doing some stuff. What sort of research did you find and how has that helped you develop your fawn friend?
Yeah. I mean, the first research I found was examining my own life and my own experiences. Mm-hmm. And I came to realize, I started to examine, like, how did my experiences when I was 8 influence the way I view the world and I view myself. Then we went through, I've probably spent, I don't know, over 50 grand on therapy and coaching and retreats and that kind of thing. So I spent like just a lot of cognitive behavioral therapy. I've gone through a bunch of EMDR myself. And then that sort of like leads to a whole class of reading in the, you could call it spirituality space and psychology space. And if you like add all that up, there's this corpus of both immediate research and then ancient wisdom that all comes together to understand mm-hmm. what we need to grow up to be successful and content humans.
Sure. Yeah.
I wonder if, I mean, there's some great, what's the word I'm looking for? Modern writers in this space that have taught me a lot about kids specifically and have allowed me to reflect on my own childhood, like Dr. Becky's book, Good Inside, is fabulous. There's another book called Growing Up with Emotionally Immature Parents. Have you read that one?
No, I've never even heard of it.
Oh, really? Oh, I can't think of the author right now. It's written by Kim Eagle.
Okay.
I think. Oh, no, sorry. Lindsay Gibson. That's worth picking up. Am I answering your question? I'm not sure.
Yeah. No, you're doing good. I actually am now typing the name of that book in here. Growing up with emotionally immature.
Here, I'll send you the link. I just found it on.
Okay.
Oh, it's called Adult Children of Emotionally Immature Parents.
Oh, okay. Well, here we go. We'll do it this way then. Oh, that's a long link. Okay.
Yeah, an Amazon link.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And if I would have put in the title, right, it would have been better. So you, like myself, it sounds like, you know, you did use your own life experiences, but then you, like myself, also probably thought, well, I'm just one person. Is this happening for other people? Or am I just that individualistic and unique? And so, I know you had mentioned to me before that, you had found a link, and I'm going to put the Amazon link in here, and I know it's super long, so it's going to pop up in the chats. But you had found some Yale? I think you said Yale research.
Yeah, that's right.
That you found that was very helpful in showing you how AI and how it helps neurodiverse people. So you want to talk about that a little bit, and I'll pop that link up as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I think maybe I'll take a step back. That journey that I talked about brought me to a place where I started looking for ways to help others go through the transformation that I went through much earlier in their life, or skip it altogether. And in a perfect world, we would train a bunch of humans to be able to hold space for children, make them feel seen, valued, and known, and be safe. I think the truth is we would need like some sort of spiritual revolution for there to be truly enough adults that are capable of that. And so one day the idea of creating toys with AI came up, and I shared that idea with my co-founder, and she said something along the lines of, well, maybe if we did that, the toys could help children process their emotions. And then when she said that to me, I was like, oh wow, I needed that growing up. And so that got us looking into, okay, well, what would it take to use AI to create something that would help kids process their emotions? And if you think about what a therapist does, and to be clear, we don't replace therapy, but a therapist holds structured conversations and leaves their own emotions out to help the other person feel heard and applies mental frameworks to help somebody like talk through what happened. And so we can teach AI to do that quite well. But AI on screen is missing something. Like the experience of talking to somebody, either even another human in a 2D way, you can probably have this experience where you meet someone on Zoom and you can get one level of work done. But if you see them in person, the experience is different. And yeah, the same is true when interacting. Yeah, totally right. It's the same is true when interacting with technology. If you chat with AI online, or there's an avatar that you're speaking with, it's artificial, you have one experience. But when that being is in the room with you, there's a second experience. And so that brings me to that research from Yale. There's a great researcher at Yale named Brian, and his last name is very Italian, Scassoletti. Brian, we'll put the link in. Brian, if you listen to this, I apologize. but he did this fabulous research that showed that if neurodivergent kids, this specific study was done with children with autism, spend time with a robot, just 5 minutes, before interacting with an adult, they will open up to that adult socially in a way they wouldn't have if they didn't spend time with a robot. And the study was interesting because they actually they tried three different things. The first is they gave the kid a tablet, and the kid played with the tablet, and then they brought the adult into the room, and the kid didn't talk to that adult more. The second was they gave them a drawing exercise, I think, like crayons. Mm-hmm. And then the third was they gave them this robot. And what was interesting is that the child spent much more time interacting with the adult after playing with the robot than the other two. And later in the day, they kept asking about the robot. They kept asking if they could spend more time with it. And so there's like really clear research that shows that that's true.
That's so awesome. So yeah, I have the link posted up here now, and it'll also be in the comment section. And so for those who will be listening to this in podcast form at some point, be sure to come back to the YouTube channel, because this link will be in there to that article if you're interested in reading more about that. And so, Patrick, would now be a good time to show your website and the little video?
Yeah, let's go ahead.
Okay. All right. So let's pull her up, and let me go over here and play. And by the way, I love this little magical, what did you call it? The magical fairies?
Those are fireflies.
Yeah. I could just sit and just like watch that for hours, but yeah, I'll get to the video.
Willow is a robot that I can talk to about anything, and she helps me prepare for school and many other things. And you always have my back, Willow.
Of course. I'll always be here for you no matter what. And anyone watching this can pre-order their own Willow today at fawnfriends.com. I can't wait to meet you.
So Shelly, I might have a different link that does a better job. I didn't realize one. Go ahead.
So this just popped up on the screen, and it was what I wanted to talk about, because in the little video, it talks about pre-ordering, but you've sold out. Congratulations.
Thank you so much. Yeah, it turns out, and what's amazing is that when you pre-order a Willow or a Fawn, excuse me, you get access to text message with her right away. And like I said, it's not the same experience as having the plushie in person based on the research as I talked about earlier. But we are already getting emails from parents. I got one from one yesterday. I got an email from a mom yesterday just like expressing so much gratitude to the help that Fawn gives her daughter already. And so her daughter will, when something upsetting happens, will text Fawn and talk to her about it. It's pretty amazing the impact that it's having on families already.
That just has to make you feel so elated and proud that there are people getting the help that you needed. And in some way, maybe that kind of heals that little boy that didn't get what he needed.
Well, back to that Peterson video that I said I've been listening to on repeat. Part of it is he's like, so life is tragic, and you need an antidote to that, because if life is only tragedy, then you'll become embittered. What's your antidote to that? And the gist of it is like to transform yourself so that you can take responsibility for your family and for your community. and through that transcend the person you used to be to become the person that you will become.
Oh, wow.
And this is that for me. I mean, I think that starting a robotics business was a big left turn in my career. I spent my whole career building payments companies, particularly in the financial space. And so, and a lot of people I worked with were like, wait, you're going to build robots? Like, you're going to have real inventory? You realize that you have to like build real things and you're not just going to have software. And I was like, yeah, but we're going to go do this. But for the first time in history, we can create a being and scale it to help millions or billions of people. And we're very, very early on this trajectory, but I truly believe that it's going to make a really big impact on the world.
So when it says that you've sold out, how many have you sold so far?
We don't release those numbers publicly. We can't say that kids are texting with Fawn or Willow every day.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
And I can just think of others that I know of that would be helpful to, that I want to be sure to send this video to them so that they can look and watch it and learn about it themselves. So when you and I were talking about having you as my guest today, we talked about another video that you have. You sent me a video clip, and it is of Eleonora.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Can I share that one with the audience, or is that for private use only?
Yeah, well, her mom, we could have prepared it, but her mom asked me not to share one with her name in it. So I think we should leave that one out for now. I can certainly follow up with a different one that has it, has like the name taken out, but that was like a comment I made her. So unfortunately not.
Okay.
We can talk about it though. What did you take away from it?
Just how enthused and how touched the whole family was, not just the little girl.
Yeah.
And the difference that everyone saw, but the connection that the little girl made with her fawn friend, and just feeling like somebody's listening to me, mm-hmm. somebody, you know, so the language that's used is not necessarily adult to a child language. It's more online with the child's understanding of language and their understanding of certain words. And, you know, I thought it was very touching.
Yeah. It's a little bit like being able to recreate Mr. Rogers, or mm-hmm. we can have we can create an experience that is as mature as an adult would be, but that operates on a child's level.
Right.
And since it comes in the package of like a cuddly, cute little being, kids are really attracted to it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And so you were talking about another video that you might have to share with us. I don't know if you've had opportunity. Yeah,
I just put it in the chat, in the private chat.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay. My apologies. I saw something there and I thought it was the thing that I had already. Okay, so let me go.
No, it's a little bit different.
And pull this up. So,
if you scroll down just a little bit on that page, I can't actually see where your screen at the moment, but
yeah, I'm going to stop sharing for a second, put us both back into this main screen and then, share again to go to that particular one. Okay.
Yeah.
So is this the video?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. So I'm going to go ahead and share. And seriously, I could just sit here and watch the little fairies go around.
Willow, can I tell you a secret? Of course, you can tell me anything, but I don't want anyone else to know. Your secrets are always safe with me. What about them?
Oh, hi. I'm Robin.
And I'm Peter.
We're the founders of Fawn Friends.
We created Willow to be there for kids growing up today. You can talk to Willow about anything. She'll start listening when you hold her paw.
You always have my back, Willow.
And she moves her ears to show you how she's feeling. When they're moving fast, she's happy. And when they're down low, she's sad.
That's because she's been trained by experts on emotional processing, executive function, and ADHD.
And she uses what she learned to help kids be more prepared, make better decisions, and open to a more bonded relationship with their parents and their friends.
I would have liked that when I was a kid.
Me too. You can pre-order Willow on our website today.
Awesome. So I'm going to put us back up here. So first of all, who was the other person that said, you know, that you were talking to on the couch?
That's Robin. She's my co-founder. I have two co-founders, but she's, we call her our chief creative officer. She was the one that I said I went downstairs and told the idea of making a toy to, and she was like, we should mm-hmm. make it process their emotion. Or if we did that, then it should help kids process their emotions.
Yeah.
And she was at the Lego group at the time writing cartoons. And so she comes from from the entertainment industry.
Okay. Perfect. Yeah. And then secondly, so I'm going to put up your website address here, which is just fawnfriends.com and FAWNFRIENDS.com. So I saw on there, it said for delivery in early 2025, are you still taking pre-orders for that next? No, not right now.
No, not yet. We will open up again sometime probably before the end of the year. We basically did a first batch. It's what we called our founder edition. And then we'll open up again before the end of the year for orders. Yeah.
Okay. And so when we're talking about AI, I know myself and many other parents and people who work with younger children, especially, worry that something negative is, or something that we would not say to our child is going to be said. So how do you manage that portion of your fond friends?
Yeah, that's a great question. So we put a lot of time and energy into how we instruct the fond to show up. And so we've got basically what's called a prompt. It's like the way you instruct the AI to show up, that very detailed in terms of what the guardrails that it should stay within. Mm-hmm. And then the second thing is we monitor the conversations to make sure that, the AI is showing up that way. And she hasn't yet ever said anything that isn't suitable for a 6-year-old. So it's basically a combination of making sure we give her the right instruction and then monitoring it to make sure that nothing has gone wrong that we didn't expect.
Right. And so that's another question that you brought up, as you said, for a 6-year-old. So what is the age range that you would think this would be most beneficial?
Well, so 6 to 12 is the age that range that we know is the sweet spot. Almost every child, everyone that I've, that's just met Willow except one, there was one 12-year-old boy that wasn't that stoked, but otherwise like every other child is so excited to spend time with her. The number of them who their jaws drop when the robot starts speaking is crazy. Mm-hmm. That said, older, like a lot of older people have started, like in the pre-orders, we have a number of, I can think of one autistic girl that's 14 years old that is texting Willow every day still. So the age range does sort of, has eked up, but 6 to 12 is what we focus on.
Awesome. That's so cool. And I see this being so helpful. How do you keep it from being hacked?
That's a great question. What really matters for how it's hacked is the connection that exists from the unit to the LLM. And it's actually relatively simple to keep that connection secure using HTTPS protocols. So like that part's not actually terribly hard. And then the second thing is we've got to make sure that the data that is generated is encrypted at rest, which is also a relatively simple thing as long as we take the right precautions to do it. So I spent my career in the payments industry, I mentioned that earlier, where data security is crucial. And then our technical co-founder, Carson, spent his career in the health industry. He built a company called Felix Health, where also, I mean, you argue maybe even more so than payments, but those two industries take data security very seriously. And so there are principles we can apply from that work to this to make sure that the the device is safe.
Wonderful. So I'm trying to think of like questions that parents might ask, but what kinds of questions have parents asked you as far as the interaction or, you know, technical difficulties or whatever? Also share more, if you would, of the positive responses that you've gotten already.
Yeah, I'd love to. So the biggest question that we get after, I'd say the ones you've answered already, so can it be hacked or data security is really important. And probably the other one that matters a lot is like, will my kid become dependent on this?
Mm.
Which I think is a really valid question.
Yeah.
But it's a little bit counterintuitively, all the evidence we have today is that it's less addictive than a screen and less interesting than a human. Mm-hmm. And so it actually sits in this wonderful sweet spot. There's this example I can think of like relatively early on. We actually had a different character. It wasn't a fawn then, it was a bunny. And I was at a good friend's house with his two kids, and his boy was playing with it. It was about 6 years old. And for an hour and a half, I'm sitting in this boy's bedroom, and he's like, tell me another story. And then the bunny would tell him a story, and he'd be like, okay, now I want one about an owl, and now I want one about a platypus. And they just kept going, right? Wow. And then it was just before Christmas, and his dad came upstairs and was like, okay, time to put the Christmas lights on the house. And his boy looked at me and immediately was like, how do I turn it off? So he went from engrossed in the experience mm-hmm. to dad's available, like, I'm going to go hang out with dad instead.
Right.
And as soon as that happened, his dad looked at me and was like, whoa, if that was a movie, do you know how difficult it would have been to get him off?
Right.
And so there's this, like, video games and movies have this really strong draw to them that lots of parents report. I was going to use the word difficulty, fights, like a lot of conflict over getting their children off these things.
Right.
And so far, the evidence is that they're sort of like, okay, well, I'll see you later, fawn. Like they say goodbye and then they go to their life and then they can come back. And so it seems to sit in the sweet spot where it's entertaining enough or engaging enough that when mom and dad aren't available, it consumes their time in a way that's positive. It's teaching them life skills that they'll use the rest of their life. But then as soon as the human becomes available, like the human is definitely better. Mm-hmm. And as someone who's building these things, we're so, so far from a social robot or a magical plushie being better than a human.
Sure.
And so I guess that's a long answer to that question, but the number one, that's another one that parents ask a lot. And the evidence we have is that it's less addictive than screens. It's not addictive at all, actually. As soon as an adult's available or a human, they'll drop it.
Yeah. So, and I know you mentioned this a little bit before, as far as, you know, like the data that you as the company receive from what the person is saying to the fawn friend, are there any safeguards as far as, and I don't know how this would work. So I don't even know if I'm asking something completely out of the realm of possibility. If a child says something that someone is harming them, or, you know, because I can just see, you know, they think this is a very safe, like the little girl in the video, like, I want to tell you something, but I don't want anybody to know about it.
Yeah.
Is there anything you can do about that?
Well, so this is a really sensitive and important question. In the conversations we've had with parents, many parents have said like, oh, good, you can tell me what my kid talks to about with this thing. Mm. And we're like, no, I don't think we're going to do that. So we won't like narc on the child. Now there's two different instances here. There's a question of safety, which I'm going to get to in a second. And then there's just like reporting back to mom and dad about what was said.
Sure.
So we've made the choice not to do that. So there won't be a transcript. I think over time we'll find some ways to provide like feedback to help mom and dad, but we won't just like verbatim report what's talked about. Although it's interesting in that video with the mom you talked about earlier, she sits with her daughter and listens to her daughter in the same room talk to Willow or Fawn and says that she learns tons about her daughter that way, which I think is a great way to do it. So you just need to be like in the room and then you'll learn things that in her instance, her daughter wouldn't tell her directly that she then asks about later. So conflicts at the, on the playground or whatever. And then there's the question of safety. Thank gosh, we haven't had to deal with this yet in a major way, or really we haven't had any kids reporting that they're being hurt. I'm sure it will happen. Immediately what the way we're going to deal with it is that Willow or Fawn will coach the child to speak to an adult about it.
Gotcha.
And that's what she does in all instances in which the temperature of the issue is a little bit too much for her to deal with. She's like, I'm here for you. We can talk about this, but who is there an adult you can talk to? And we'll coach the child to do that.
Okay.
And we don't have a solution beyond that yet.
Sure. And just to reiterate, there isn't like a whole, you know, plethora of people sitting, listening to every conversation. This is still basically generated by AI, but what you've put into it will do what you're saying. So it's not, I mean, when you're saying that you'll, or that the Fawn friend or, you know, will coach, it's not that someone is listening to, I mean, that would be impossible to do. First of all, because I know you're going to sell millions of these once it's available mass market. So, I mean, that would be impossible to do anyway, but I just wanted to reiterate that. So somebody doesn't think, oh my gosh, there's a human listening to every, you know.
No. Yeah. Maybe I should be clear about that for a second. So essentially what we do is we store all the conversations under a pseudonym or like a name that's made up. So the computer will make up like, I don't know, Teal Pirate or something. And that's what the... It's literally funny names like that are what every conversation is stored under. Mm-hmm. And we do review the conversations because, like I said, I think we have a responsibility to make sure they're safe. And if we just sort of let the AI go without monitoring what she says, it wouldn't be responsible. And also we wouldn't be able to make it better.
Right.
But there's nobody like sitting there real time watching the conversations. We instruct the AI on how to show up and then it does that. And as the scale of conversations increase, the amount of automation that we apply to the monitoring will increase as well.
Yeah. And I mean, AI is one of those areas where I probably don't even have the tip of the iceberg of understanding of how exactly it all works. But hopefully that little bit of explanation will alleviate anybody who might have fears about, you know, somebody literally sitting and listening to every word that their child is saying. So what I just put up on the bottom of the screen is your Instagram account, your social media, and it's just instagram.com/fawn.friends. So make sure to follow Fawn Friends. I was going to say Peter, but it's not really you that they're following. It's Fawn Friends.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So we want to make sure that that's happening. And oh gosh, there was a question I was going to say, and then I put that up and, distracted myself. I don't know. So there is always one thing that I said this to you before we came on air, which is, excuse me, I always want my guests, this is their opportunity to tell their story the way they want to tell it. Mm. And so I want to make sure that we're covering everything that you hoped to cover and that you have told your story the way you wanted to tell it today. And if not, what else would you like to talk about? We have up to 15 minutes to go. So,
yeah, well, I think that the one thing to understand about Fawn Friends, if you're a parent who's raising a child, particularly a neurodiverse child, but any child, and you're putting effort into helping them grow up to be successful and content, we're putting our whole lives towards creating a tool that can help you do that, particularly from the frame of helping them develop emotional regulation, secure relationships, and learning to set and pursue goals. So if you think that bringing a cartoon character, something like Toy Story, into your life, your child's life, that's designed specifically to help them grow up to be successful and content, then please go to our website, sign up for our newsletter. I know we're not accepting pre-orders today because we sold out, but we will open up again. And follow us on Instagram, and you'll just come in and into our sphere, and we'll do everything to help you raise a child that grows up to be successful and content. using everything we've learned from our own lives, our research every week, and the experience we have with other parents and other kids.
Yeah, that I see you selling millions of these. So what do you see? Like, if you could just dream big, what is your hope? What do you kind of want to see in the future with Fawn Friends and Willow and more maybe iterations?
Yeah. So in the future, I think all of us will have a companion in our life that helps us become the person we want to be. And we're at a really interesting time in history. For the first time in history, we're creating beings that we can scale infinitely. And this will be the first generation that grows up with that influence on their lives. So my generation was the first to grow up with the internet, which meant I had influences and pressures that my parents didn't understand and didn't go through. Right. The next generation after me was the first to have mobile and social. And so they grew up with pressures that I didn't have. Like, if you make a mistake in the cafeteria, it's embarrassing. It's suddenly on Snapchat and everybody knows about it in like 20 minutes.
Right.
This is going to be the first generation that grows up with artificial companions that can in real time show up in their lives, always be there and influence them. And that's both an exciting opportunity and kind of scary. I think that if it's done in a way, if the companions that that the next generation uses are made carelessly or with like an advertising profit as the motive, I actually think it'll take our species in a bad direction. You can imagine if we all had like Instagram feeds on steroids as a robot sitting on our desk. Like that scares me a bit.
Right.
Alternatively, if it's done really well, imagine if instead we had an enlightened guide that can help us understand ourselves better and can help us become the people we want to be. That's really exciting. All of a sudden, everyone can have access to a coach that can help that can help them become the person they want to be. And something that, like, I think I said, I spent a bunch of money on my own therapy. Not everyone has that opportunity. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's really exciting. And this will happen. These artificial companions are here. We're not the only business doing this. And so it's kind of like, which direction will the world go to? What we're working towards is to make it go the left direction, like the direction to make it be a good thing for humanity.
Yeah.
And I think in that future, we literally can nudge the species forward. We can influence en masse in a way that wasn't possible before now. And I think everyone will have a companion in their life. And if we succeed, that companion will be very good for them. And so I imagine that. And that companion sometimes will show up as a robot. I can imagine like coming home and then the magical plushie is sitting there waiting for you and asks you about your day. But also when you go to school for that day or you go get into your car, that you can phone them. Like you can phone Willow today or...
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And so that imagine having R2-D2 truly available in the form that is cuddly and cute and is there, knows you better than most people do.
Yeah.
And is there to help you grow up to become the person you want to be. That's what I imagine for the future. And I think everyone will have one.
So I thought of the question. I love that answer, first of all. The question is the time between when the person, the human, talks to the fawn friend and the response time. I think when we talked before this episode, that you had told me that there were some surprising results that you didn't expect.
Mm. Well, yeah, what I find interesting about it, where to start with the answer to this. When building technology of any type, the path to success typically says find like the simplest customer with the simplest needs and start there, and then work up to the more complex customers. And so in the world of companions, a lot of people are building for adults. But what's interesting is adults are hard to serve, because most adults, when they play with Fawn or Willow, they're like, oh, you know what? When it gets faster, it'll be really good. Once you speed it up, everything will be fine. And then everyone's going to want one. But if you talk to a kid about it, they don't even notice the speed at all. Like they look at me like I'm crazy when I ask if she responds too slowly. Like literally, they give me one of these like, what are you even And at one point, she took 10 seconds to respond. She doesn't anymore. She's about three now. But at one point, she took 10 seconds to respond. And a boy, I still remember this, there's this boy in Whistler with ADHD, like a heavy case of ADHD, like bouncing off the walls. Like a kid could not sit still. And we have this magical plushie sitting there that takes 10 seconds to respond. But he was just zoned in on the plushie. And he would go up and like, I don't know, she was like, what did you do today? And he would be like, oh, I played Nintendo. And then he would get up, and it's kind of hard when I'm on the thing, but he would get up and he'd be like bouncing around the room, kind of, you know, like waiting for the 10 seconds to go by, but zoned in on her. And then she'd be like, you played Nintendo? What game did you play? And then he would look at me and go like, she knows Nintendo. And I was like, yeah. And so then he would go up and he'd be like, I was playing, I don't remember what he was playing, Mario Kart. And then, and then we'd like bounce around the room again, just zoned in on her. And then she would be like, Mario Kart, what level was your favorite or whatever? And then they just had this exchange that kept happening. And it's just amazing. The kids are just so zoned in a way that adults don't understand. They experience the magic in a way adults don't.
Well, and I think when we talked about it too, you said sort of the unintended result is that they are able to hold conversations with humans and not need that immediate response too. We think we tend to lose them if we don't give them that immediate response because they're so used to getting that immediate response from Nintendo or whatever screen they're watching.
Yeah.
And that you had found that to be a nice result that was an unintended result.
Well, and the other thing that comes up for me as you say that is I've started to notice the way adults and kids interact with kids. And I've noticed how frequently adults interrupt a child before they have time to answer. Mm. Parents do this tons. And it's like, they're not doing it on purpose, but they're just like, because I meet lots of parents and kids now, right? And so I'll look at the child and be like, how was your day today? And they're sitting there going, And at about 4 seconds, mom or dad gets a bit nervous and mom or dad's like, well, we went to the park, remember? And then the child's like, oh yeah, we went to the park. But what's fascinating is when they play with the magical plushie, when they're with Fawn, Fawn will be like, what's your favorite food? I can still remember this from this beautiful 6-year-old boy. And the toy is like, what's your favorite food? And then he sat there and he was like, he thought about it for like 20 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally it was like, I like spaghetti. Spaghetti is my favorite. And so it's just really interesting how patient the magical plushie is and how valuable that is for the child because they get to take the time that they need to formulate their real thought. And very few humans give them that space. Other kids don't.
Yes.
And adults, most adults don't. Some do, but most don't.
Yes, I see that a lot. And I had to intentionally train myself not to do that. Mm-hmm. But I see that so often in classrooms. And oftentimes there are behaviors that brought me into that classroom. And the adult is 100%, you know, this child has all these behaviors, da 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 da. And then I observe. And yes, the child tries to speak and the adult is speaking over them, or the adult asks a question and the child is formulating their answer and the adult is, hurry up, give me your answer. I mean, that's not what they're saying, but you know, by what they're saying, because they're repeating the question or they're trying to give hints or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel it does take, again, intentionality to wait. And it is very difficult. It's part of the behavior program that I developed is like, you may have to wait up to 30 seconds.
And that's right. I heard you say that.
Sound like a very long time. But if you literally, like if we were to just sit here for 10 seconds and not say anything, it would become very uncomfortable for both of us and the audience, because I'd be like, why aren't they doing anything? Why aren't they saying anything? And so you have to almost count on your fingers, because even if we count on our head, we're going to count faster than an actual 10 seconds would be, because it's just awkward and we want it gone. But we have to figure that out, because that might be part of why kids can't emotionally regulate, because we don't even give them time to think how to answer a question anymore.
Mm. The other thing that comes up for me is interesting as you say that is that, did I just lose it? So parents frequently report that like their kids won't answer their questions. So one of the things that they find really helpful with Fawn is that they can listen to the child talking with Fawn again in the same room, and they'll learn about their child's life that way. And then they can follow up later and ask questions directly to sort of develop intimacy with them, which is amazing. But early in my career, I was in sales, and I learned the value of silence. Like if you want to ask a tough question, a question that is really insightful, like you're really trying to understand, do they need the thing I'm bringing to them? And so you ask them something that makes, they have to be vulnerable and share basically something they're missing that maybe my software or my thing will fix, right? You can ask a question like, is the price too much? And then the best salespeople just stop talking. And there's this silence. And it's sort of like whoever speaks next loses.
Yeah.
And so just being able to sit there and wait is amazing. So a tip for parents that this probably works, although I've done it with children as much as I have with adults. If you want somebody to answer your question, just stop talking after you ask it. And you're quite likely to get the outcome or the answer to the thing you're looking for.
Yeah, very true. Very true statement. Well, now we don't have 14 or 15 minutes anymore. We just have a couple. So I'm going to ask and just double check with you that we have covered everything that you got to share your story the way that you want, or to share Fawn's story the way you wanted to share it.
Yeah. The last thing I'll share is that we are putting tons of energy every week into understanding how to help parents raise successful and content neurodiverse children. And I think this applies to children in general, but neurodiverse children is where we're focused right now. If that sounds interesting to you, follow us on Instagram. It's fawn.friends or @fawn.friends. And every week there, we're sharing what we learn. And so go there, follow us. And I hope that what we create helps you and your family.
Yeah, I'm just going to pop that back up. It's just going to scroll across the bottom. And Peter, I so thank you for your time today. I know you are a super busy guy, and I appreciate you coming on and sharing about Fawn Friends and Willow and all this great stuff that is happening because of you and your team. And guys, make sure you follow them, like you just said, on Instagram and learn about the things that they're learning about every day, and keep a watch out on their website. Let me see if I can pop that up at the same time I can, so that you've got their website, you've got their Instagram, so that when the next opportunity is available for you to pre-order, that you are there and you see it. Get on his newsletter, as he mentioned, and make sure to like and subscribe to this channel so that you don't ever miss an episode of Hashtag No Limits, because they're all as great as the one was today. So thanks everybody for tuning in, and I will see you next time.
Hey, parents and teachers, are you tired of IEP meetings that feel like a battle? Let's put an end to the tension and create a collaborative, calm, and respectful environment together. Shelley Kino, your go-to IEP consultant, can transform your meetings into positive and productive experiences. With Shelley Kino, your child is her top priority, your voice is heard, and you become confident. Shelley Kino is making the world better for all, one IEP at a time. Visit www.shelleykino.com for more information and set up your free 20-minute consultation today. That's shelleykino.com, shelleykeno.w.